Let's Talk Crypto with Gabrielle Haynes.
Hello, we're on with Xavier, who is now the founder of Pre-IPO. How are you doing today, Xavier?
Very well. Thanks for having me on the show.
Is that your correct title? I didn't ask you before we started recording here.
Yeah, it's Xavier from Pre-Pure.
Oh, Pre-PO, excuse me. Pre-IPO, Pre-PO. Okay, no I, just PO.
No I. It's pre-public offering, Pre-Pure.
Got it. At least I got the founder part right. So off to 50%, you know, that's good enough. Anyway, thank you for joining me today. So I just wanted to learn a bit more about what you're doing, and maybe we can just get started by telling me a little bit about your background, your story.
Yeah, so it's a long story. I guess I started back in uni studying economics and finance and computer science, which I think are the exact three things you need to found a DeFi protocol. I didn't know it at the time, though. I was very interested in Bitcoin back then as well, and playing around with a lot of the altcoins that were there at the day. But of course, they weren't programmable, so it didn't quite spark my interest enough to create something in the space. Then a bit later, I was doing game development. So I was creating all these experimental games and hosting game jams, which are like hackathons for game development. So I had like a music game jam where you create game jams about, games that are related to music or have music in them, or unexpected game jam where you create games that have elements that are unexpected to the player, and all these other kinds of game jams. And while I was doing that, I was living in Korea, and I was also exploring, I think this was 2017. So it was during the ICO bubble as well with Ethereum. And so I was trying to follow that space, checking out some of the, particularly the gaming projects that were happening in Ethereum back then. I wish there weren't many, but it was quite interesting. So I thought, oh, I want to try making one as well. So I started learning Solidity. There was this online course by the Loom Network guys called Crypto Zombies. So I started learning it through that. And I attended this hackathon that they had in Korea, which was the blockchain game jam. And through that, I really got inspired and thought I should try finding a job in this. So when I came back to Australia, I started looking for a crypto job. And so I found these guys in Melbourne called Flexstaps. And they're behind a number of really reputable projects. I know you had Sid on here from Maple. They worked on the MVP, a bunch of other interesting MVPs for projects that came out of Australia. And so I worked on them with a project for a few months, and that kind of got me started in the space. But I didn't come back to it until quite recently. So I've been following it for quite some time, but I was off working at Canva, which is Australia's largest unicorn now. They're like an online graphic design company. So I was working for them, and I was really bullish on their long-term success, and I wanted to get more upside exposure, but there was no way for me to do that. I was also missing out on all these IPOs, which I really wanted. Problem that my friends and colleagues were also facing. And so I was already following the space for a long time, and I thought there must be a way in DeFi to fix this problem. And so I came up with Pre-PO, which is basically a decentralized exchange that allows you to get exposure to the upside or downside of any pre-IPO company or pre-token project. And so we have this mission to democratize pre-public equity. So what was previously reserved for a very exclusive group of individuals, those being like the wealthy and well-connected, now we're opening up that to everyone and making it accessible for everyone. So now retail investors can participate, those from different geographies can participate, and all without needing to have certain wealth requirements or minimum transaction sizes, for example. Yeah, so that's a bit about me.
Okay, lot to dive into there. What's your favorite game?
My favorite game? I'm really into experimental games, which is a bit of a niche, but games that kind of push games forward as an art form. And so I'm a big fan of The Beginner's Guide, which was made by one of the creators of The Stanley Parable, which is pretty popular. But The Beginner's Guide is kind of like a compilation of all these fake or maybe not fake, it's not clear in the story, but these collection of like experimental games that this person like apparently discovered on a hard drive. They're kind of like weaved together and like walking through all these weird experiences. Like one is like where you're in a in a prison cell and you're just stuck there and you can't do anything. And I actually made a game quite similar to that. I'm inspired by that, where you get stuck in three different prison cells, which only unlock after a certain amount of time, and you basically lock yourself in. I find these games really interesting because they're like pushing forward what it means to be a game, and they're very
That's pretty interesting. Stanley's Parable is the game where you're born into like an office and you keep getting reset.
Exactly. And then like you start out choosing a door and they say go down the left door, and then you can choose to defy that and you can go down the right door as well.
Right. That's the only reason I know that game. I watched Lex Friedman play that game on his YouTube channel, and it was pretty interesting just to see his commentary as he was playing. It was pretty fun. But it's definitely not the type of game you would think of when you're like, oh, I'm playing a game on the computer, right? Usually what I think of, I'm maybe just biased. Right. I'm like, have a sword, I'm killing people, I'm like leveling up, I'm collecting stuff, like maybe like an RPG, like an MMO. That's usually what I think people are thinking of when they're thinking of games. You're describing a much different, like a different subsect, maybe less action, but more philosophy, perhaps.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course, it's not the most, like they're not the most popular games. Like most people would play the ones with action. They would play it as a way to like wind down, not a way to think more.
So you get, so you work at, you said Canva, right?
Yeah, Canva.
Okay, that's a quite a popular service. I enjoy using Canva a lot. What is one thing maybe you learned working at Canva?
Well, many things. That was my like first, well, one of my first jobs at a like one a bigger tech organization. And so I learned a lot about what the best practices are for example, writing code and sending it out for review, and also like some really great standards for working with a team and like leading projects and taking ownership. Even in our team now, which is like fully decentralized and like globally distributed and like fully remote, we've taken a lot of inspiration on the team, like culture and values side. So we've kind of got our own values there that have taken some inspiration from Canva. For example, Canva has a value, which is be a good human, and we have that as well. They have one, which is be a force for good. We have like be an effective force for good. So I've been like reading a lot on effective altruism, which is basically thinking about how you can give, but in the most effective way possible. So it's all about like analyzing all the different ways you can give back, and then finding what is the optimal way to give back that maximizes like your impact, for example, per dollar or like per unit of time. And so we have that kind of philosophy. The Prepio DAO has at least a 1% pledge for our time and our product and our effort towards and our treasury towards making the world a better place and using those resources to make a positive change.
Nice, very good. I like that a lot. The taking those ideas of culture is something that's so important. People talk a lot about crypto culture these days. It's been a big topic, but it's interesting to see how you can adopt the culture that you want within your own business, your own projects. Very important to think about. Canva is quite the product. We need that in crypto too. Just something that has a great interface, easy to use.
Exactly. That's something I picked up as well. Like from the get-go, I knew Prepio had to be very, very, very simple to use. So anyone could be able to use it. So you have to pass like the grammar test. They should be able to understand it ideally. I think we're not quite there yet with crypto, just by nature of having things like MetaMask. It's not quite there yet, but that's kind of where we're aiming. So we're trying to abstract away as much complexity as possible. And that's something I've definitely picked up as well.
So yeah, let's dive into the product. I'm pretty interested to learn how it works. So you said any company that is, well, maybe let's start before. How does the pre-PO process work now? Let's say before you came around, how would you get access to these investment deals?
Right. So as a retail investor, you wouldn't get access pretty much, unless they've specifically put it on some kind of crowdfunding website. And even then, there's like a limited number of places, limited allocations. Then you're pretty much out of luck. If you wanted to get into a, say, the next upcoming hot pre-IPO company, you wouldn't be able to do that as a retail investor. It's typically reserved for a limited number of institutional investors. And even then, they have to fight over for a slice of the pie. And so it's generally who are the most well-connected. It ends up typically going to the same group of people every time. And so everyone kind of at all layers of like investor levels would be excluded in some way. And so by making it a, before I get into Prepio, maybe we'll talk more about the existing product. So as an accredited investor or a retail investor, you can still be excluded in some way. Then if you wanted to trade like secondary shares, you could go onto platforms like EquityZen, for example, where you could potentially trade them if someone from that company is offering up their shares for trade. But the price is very non-transparent. So since there isn't an actively trading market on it, you don't really know what is the right price there. And if you do want to go through those channels, then you're expecting a processing time of days or weeks if you do find the deal. And you have a minimum investment of often like 10K or way higher. You're also restricted based on your geography. So many countries simply can't participate at all. And then when you have those representative shares, you're locked up 6 months post IPO. So you can't really trade them again. You also face with really high fees. So you're talking like 3-5% or higher for making each of these trades. You have to do all this paperwork, it's not anonymous, and you don't maintain your privacy there. So of course, all the data you provide could be leaked. And then typically it's only for really late stage companies as well. So there are a lot of disadvantages to the current process. And that's for the company side. And we also cover the pre-token side. So getting exposure to crypto projects before they go live. And so there is nothing for that right now. So those are the two existing cases. And so how Prepio addresses those is that we allow for unlimited, unrestricted access for everyone. And we achieve that through it being through them being synthetic assets. So you're not getting the real thing, you're getting exposure to representations of the real thing. And what that allows us to do is scale it unlimitedly. So anyone can participate with any amount. So there's no minimum investment. Your processing times are instant. You have global participation. You don't have any like lockup periods or anything, so you can freely trade it. We have much lower fees because it's all decentralized. You don't have to rely on shareholders or token holders being willing to make a trade. You can just make the trade. And you can, of course, not have to hand over all these private documents that could be leaked. And another advantage unique to DeFi is that you can integrate with the rest of the Ethereum ecosystem, or if we're multi-chain, the rest of the crypto ecosystem. So that whole like money Lego aspect as well. So yeah, there are a number of stark differences and advantages here.
Let's dive in a bit to how this actually works. Who's providing the market for these synthetic assets? Can anyone take either side of the equation, or are there professional market makers evaluating the companies? How does it work?
Yeah, so we have liquidity providers, but anyone could be a liquidity provider. So those could be professional market makers, or they could just be regular investors who want to LP and earn some rewards. So maybe I should talk about that. There are three layers of rewards for both traders and liquidity providers. So if you're a liquidity provider, typically if you're in some other farm, you're going to be earning the pool fees as a liquidity provider. So we still have that layer as well, but then we have two additional layers. So as the second layer, every deposit in our system, whether you're a trader or a liquidity provider, will be earning yield farming rewards in the background. So basically when you deposit, we convert that deposit into a collateral token, and behind the scenes, we're sending it out to effective yield farming strategies. So then you're earning like, you know, your 5 to 15% or whatever each year. So regardless of whether you actually end up making a profit or a loss, that's going to offset some of it or even exceed it. And then we have the third layer, which is PPO rewards. So that's our native governance token. So we distribute to those who are actively using our system. And so that's a third little reward as well. We don't actively rely on that like some other platforms, because I think we think in a bear market, it's not sustainable to only rely on incentivizing LPs with that third layer, which is the token, but we think it's a nice little sharing on top. And so you're getting these three layers of rewards. And in terms of the risk you face for doing that, what we've done is we've focused on making it as low risk and highly incentivized as possible for LPs. And so we take measures in the underlying AMM to restrict it using concentrated liquidity and restricted ranges in order to reduce their maximum loss. So the maximum they could possibly lose from like impermanent loss or from the prices changing to single digits. And so if they have this single digit maximum loss and they're getting three layers of rewards, then it makes a lot of sense to anyone who's just you're farming stables right now to just go through PPO instead, because they're going to be earning those two extra layers of rewards, and they're only facing single digit maximum loss in the downside in the worst case.
All right. So first of all, how is the price set on these assets? It's just purely just market driven.
Exactly. So prior to going public, there of course is no price oracle for private assets. And so it has to be purely speculation. So it's just the forces of supply and demand in an underlying AMM that will facilitate price discovery. And therefore, that's what everyone's trading at. When it does go public, that's when we feed in the final settlement price.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. How does the collateral work? So it's only stable coins?
Yeah, so the collateral is fully backed by stable coins. But in terms of our UI, we'll make it very simple and such that you could provide any kind of token, and behind the scenes it would just convert it into the collateral, or convert it into the stablecoin, which then gets converted into the collateral. So from the user experience perspective, it's like you can deposit anything.
Pretty interesting. So I had this idea a while back, if you could pre-sell your airdrop. This is kind of a similar idea. I mean, same thing,
right?
Before, if you're expecting some sort of airdrop and you see it's trading very high, you can lock in that airdrop even before launch.
Exactly. I think we could definitely use Pre-Pure as a bit of a hedging mechanism. So if you know that you're getting an airdrop, and you want to like lock some of that in right now, then you can use Pre-Pure for that to kind of hedge against your existing position.
And so the pools can be made permissionlessly?
Right now we're starting with a small curated approach, but it'll be governance driven. So ultimately the token holders decide which new markets to create, with which parameters. And I typically expect that would be based on which companies or projects have the most hype around them, which will generate the most trading volume. But we'd prefer like a small curated range of markets, which are highly liquid, rather than if we made it completely free for all. What we would see is a whole bunch of markets that don't have enough liquidity yet. So we'd rather start small and expand something more similar to what Curve is doing rather than what Uniswap is doing. But in the long run, I'd love to see it fully permissionless, see if we can get the right liquidity into each market.
So the liquidity is, so you have the underlying stables, which is all, that's the only thing the user is depositing. Basically, it could be any asset, but they're depositing an asset and it goes in, and automatically that asset, so two tokens are created, basically an up token and a down token for that particular pool, and then just trade. I mean, that's the general idea.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're a long trader, then what it's actually doing is taking your stablecoin deposit, converting that into collateral, with the stablecoins being sent into your farm at that point. And the collateral gets converted into long and short tokens. So the long and short tokens are backed by the collateral. And then if you're a long trader, it'd just be selling all of the short tokens so that you only have long tokens. And now your position is just those long tokens. But that's all happening behind the scenes. So no user actually has to worry about that full process.
And is there anything in the design of the AMM that makes it more efficient, or it's just a standard AMM?
Well, we're definitely using a concentrated liquidity AMM. So just by nature, having restricted ranges, which is what we talked about with the LPing, that also means they have much higher capital efficiency if they want. So they can choose their own range, or even in the worst case, they're getting, I think it's like at least 2x capital efficiency compared to a V2 kind of approach. So it's definitely way more efficient, and we're a big fan of the more concentrated liquidity AMMs that are coming up.
Okay. So, I guess it'll just work like the V3, because what I was asking is if you have concentrated one price moves out of the range, it's up to the market makers just to reset it, just like how Uniswap works, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you don't want as much hassle, you could just go the full range. In our case, the full range isn't 0 to infinite. The full range might be, because every market has a lower and upper bound in terms of the payouts. So the full range might be the lower payout to the upper payout. So like 20% to 80%. And so that's inherently concentrated. And so you're going to get some capital efficiency gains there.
So you can, if you buy an up token at the beginning of the market, the max you can make is $2. If you buy $1, you get two. The max you can make is double, or no?
No, no, no. But it depends on how the market is set up.
Okay.
It depends on the full range of the payout percentages, but that's only for that particular defined market. So we might initially define the market, for example, for SpaceX to be like between 100 and 400 billion. But then as it becomes later and later stage and more information is revealed, and for example, if it's trading continuously at the top range, then the governance could propose, hey, this range is getting a bit inaccurate. Let's make a tighter range. A tighter range effectively acts as high leverage for traders. And so we can add a new market and move the incentives over, and then everyone will go to that new market instead, and then trade on that new market with a much more accurate range.
Right, right. And yeah, I got you. So once you hit the upper bounds, just like synthetics does, they just pause it and then they create a new market. Yeah, I got you. It's kind of weird to create a market on a company that just hasn't given you permission to do so, essentially. Is there any thought to that? Is there an issue there?
We think of it more as price discovery. So we're facilitating this price discovery that didn't exist before. So it's more of you could view it as more of a service to or a public good for each of these companies. So by facilitating this trading, suddenly when, for example, they raise the next round, they would have some kind of indicator of where they can raise that rather than just guessing, because the market has actually determined what they think it's worth.
Well, in a good scenario, they can make more, but they can also potentially make less if their valuation is substantially lower, right?
Sure, yeah. But it's a decentralized project. So, it's not dealing with the actual shares. It's just a parallel to it. So I guess in the very, very long run, Prepeer might make what was previously a private company and make it blur the lines between private and public. And then it would, like, this thing very far ahead, but it might make the private companies think about like how they deal with this. So maybe they actively engage with it and they provide more information. And so we have more transparency from private companies and perhaps even more accountability. So for example, if they do some kind of unethical action or some bad action, then you might see that reflected in the price on Prepeo. And then that's a bit of an indicator that, or a bit of a accountability mechanism, because people will be upset by that. And so you kind of have an incentive to do good, because then otherwise it'll affect your price on Prepeo. So that's the kind of scenario we can see in the long term.
Yeah, I was going to ask how you think that having this service is going to affect companies. I mean, you have to get big enough for people to notice, but at some point, you know, you have enough liquidity, then people say like, whoa, this is interesting.
Exactly. And I think, so there's that scenario. There's some companies might just choose to ignore it, and that could be fine as well. Some companies might even try to partner with it. So they might even put some of their equity onto Prepeo in some kind of partnership there, and maybe actively engage with it to allow some shareholders to hedge their positions and cash out without actually having to do that through the real shares. So there's all kinds of options here.
Yeah, because I could definitely see someone who's working at SpaceX, for example, wanting to protect the valuation. And again, kind of like an airdrop, they actually probably have some sort of equity and they would be able to short on Prepeo, and then they could know that money is secure. Is SpaceX happy about that, or they don't care, or maybe it just doesn't matter because they can't do anything about it?
Well, yeah, because it's decentralized, you probably can't do anything about it. But also, if it gets to the point where SpaceX cares about it, then I think that's a happy world to be in for Prefio, at least.
Fair enough. yeah, this is a very interesting project. I think that it's definitely filling a niche that doesn't exist right now. Essentially, it's kind of like just like a betting market on the price of any given company, which is, yeah, it unlocks a lot of different dynamics, which I think can, you know, actually affect the real world, especially, you know, with everything going on in crypto. It's going mainstream. This is blurring the line between like regular mainstream meme stocks and like crypto, and it's it could take off big, to be honest, now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, that's what we're here for. Like, we're here to change the world, I reckon.
Yeah, so how are you thinking about mobile? Is that something that you're going to be doing as well?
Yeah, I'm not sure how we'd be getting onto actual app stores, but definitely we'll have a responsive experience, because a lot of crypto users are moving towards using crypto on their mobile, even MetaMask from mobile as well, and a variety of other bots. We've definitely got to focus on that.
And on the topic of decentralization, I mean, how are you going to ensure that regulators don't come after you? I mean, this could be something that will definitely attract their attention. I mean, it's decentralized. Like, what does that mean? It's fully in the hands of the community. The team does what? Like, maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want to give like any kind of formal legal opinion, but I think it's very important for projects to be sufficiently decentralized, like just like how Ethereum is sufficiently decentralized in the eyes of regulators, I believe. And so in order to do that, we need to have a very distributed base of token holders. We need to make sure or decisions are made in a decentralized way and not in any way that's controlled by just a few actors. And if we can do that, then I think we're sufficiently decentralized.
Yeah, I understand. I think that, do you envision, what kind of integrations do you see within DeFi? So these up and down tokens are going to be ERC-20s?
Yeah. So it's all fully composable. So you can take your long tokens or short tokens, or even the collateral tokens themselves, which are pretty good, I guess, meta yield aggregated tokens, and you could use them in the rest of the DeFi ecosystem as well. So for example, you could take your long tokens for a bunch of like Elon Musk companies, and then you could put that into like a Elon index, and that could be one product, for example, just due to it being like fully composable.
And what are the fees for trading on the platform?
That too will also be decided by governance, but definitely way lower than the centralized alternatives.
Robinhood's free though. What do you mean?
Robinhood's not free. Like, there's always a cost. So you're not getting the best price, and you're also selling. Or you're going to front run essentially by high frequency traders.
Right.
They market it as free though.
Yeah. Right. Well. Yeah. Of course, they're getting away with the cuts. I wouldn't be too worried about Vlad. He's doing okay. It's really interesting because, yeah, I'm wondering how you could use these tokens, if there's going to be markets outside of this. Maybe people create outside markets. There's some sort of arbitrage opportunities. It's pretty interesting. I could see definitely a lot of people that are interested in, you know, sports that would get interested in this type of thing as well. I wonder, it's interesting because up until now, there is one way to view this, and it is as like kind of a betting market. And these betting markets haven't done super well. I mean, Augur exists. It's not, I don't know what their volume, their numbers are at all, but it doesn't seem to be super popular.
Yeah, they're frankly not popular. I think there are a number of reasons for that. Like, we've heavily researched this. So yeah, architecturally, we are like a betting market, but we don't position ourselves as one, because that's not really who we're targeting. We're not trying to target like traditional like punters on those kinds of platforms. We're targeting more regular retail investors. So we need to position it differently. I think the problem that you see with existing prediction markets, firstly, are UX. So they have a lot of problems there in terms of making it accessible with the types of users they're trying to target, which are those traditional like kind of sports bet users. So there's a lot of problems there. But even without the UX, I think the key problem is liquidity. And so when you're betting on those kinds of markets, particularly binary markets, if you're a liquidity provider on one of these platforms, you can often lose 100% of your entire position. And that's simply because if something resolves to like yes or no, then everyone in that underlying pool where you're providing liquidity is going to sell away every single useless token. And you're, as an LP, you're going to be left entirely with the useless token. And so your LP balance goes to zero. That's a really, really common situation as an LP on these platforms, which is why it doesn't really make sense at all to LP on these platforms, which is why you see no liquidity, therefore no traders either, and therefore no volume. What we have is what we call the LP flywheel. So in order to bring in traders, we need liquidity. So we have these three layers of rewards that will bring in liquidity. Also, we have that restricted downside, which is like single digit maximum loss. So with those things, we can bring in liquidity, which will therefore bring in more traders, which would therefore bring in more trading fees and therefore more liquidity. So it's a whole cycle or flywheel there. So that's missing from existing prediction markets, I think.
It's pretty interesting. Vitalik always talks about prediction markets. It seems like he always brings it up when it comes, I don't know, in every interview, he always seems to bring it up. I think he seems to think it's very important, but it just hasn't really worked out so far.
Yeah, I think it is very important, because it has a lot of possibilities and facilitates a bunch of price discovery. We're focusing on like one slice of it, but there are a bunch of other interesting use cases. I guess, like, for example, insurance can be a bit of a prediction market if you apply it to that use case. So there are a whole bunch of interesting use cases for prediction markets.
Yeah, for sure. So your team is fully decentralized. How many people are on the team right now?
It always fluctuates. Sometimes we bring in people like project by project, some are part-time, some are full-time. But yeah, we have like team members all around the world. I think we have about 10 right now, all in different capacities and doing different things. And working on a lot of projects in parallel. But yeah, we're constantly scaling and we're looking to get the community more involved as well. Maybe explore some of those guild-like approaches with the DAOs where you have a particular guild doing like writing, a particular guild doing, you know, research and that kind of thing.
What has been the biggest challenge so far in building Prepio?
I would say it's scaling the team. It's really, really tricky to find a really quality, dependable team that also works remote and can work across different time zones and can collaborate that way. So that's one of the key problems we've been facing. And apart from that, just trying to move quickly. So trying to rearrange things so we can do a bunch of things in parallel. and then trying to scale up the team so that we can achieve those goals.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everyone wants to hire. Any dev out there, I'm sure, is already hired and probably has or several jobs at this point. So I could definitely see that being a challenge. I don't know how you solve that. You just got to keep on hire all the time.
You got to keep on hiring. Maybe we should hire like a recruiter. That might make things a bit easier.
How are you thinking about building community right now?
Yeah, so we've been focusing on that from the start because I think it's really important, especially for our protocol, which will be run by the governance, to have a group of community members who are interested in it from the get-go. So everything we have is via the Discord community. So you can join in there, you can chat about like upcoming IPOs or different fundraising rounds and kind of do speculation there. Of course, we're pre-product right now, but it allows people to get hyped up for when we release things. For example, we just released our simulator, which allows you to visualize like different scenarios as a trader or as an LP. And so in lieu of the actual product right now, you can play around with that and see how you could use Preview. So those kinds of things we have. So we have our community, we have this thing called a preacher program. And in this program, you can be a preacher by spreading the good word about Preview. So you can do a bunch of actions. And then in sometime in the future, we will give some kind of rewards based on your actions. So that might be like following on Twitter or like saying something about Preview or like writing an article or something like that. So we have these community members called preachers. Everyone in our community is a pre-gen, so pre-pure degen. And then you have a third layer, which is like precogs, which are like precognitives. If you've seen the movie Minority Report, the precogs are these characters that have the psychic ability to see into the future. So I think that's quite representative of, you know, the top level actors in our system. So we try to give labels to our community members in order to make them feel more involved as well.
What are you most excited about coming up?
So I'm really excited about a NFT game that we're about to release. It's based around mergers and acquisitions, so it's a bit of a battle royale game, all using NFTs. There are a number of really unique mechanics to this as well, and so that will be out pretty soon, and yeah, I'm really excited for that. Do you want to talk about the mechanics a little bit?
Yes, please. share.
Yeah, so basically you have these companies, so when you found a company, everyone starts on the same playing field. It's a bit different to I guess other projects where they assign you rarity and say, this is how rare you are, deal with it. Instead of that, you have to build up essentially your own reputation. So you do that by competing with other companies. So you can do a compete action. You can acquire other companies and you can merge between your own companies to make your own company more powerful. Every day you're going to be earning these things called runway points, which are fully composable ESC20s. And with those runway points, you can do these compete actions, or if you have enough of them, you can do the acquire actions as well. So it's a bit of a game of accumulating as well, and teaming up with others potentially. But if you use your runway points to compete with others, you're also making yourself more vulnerable. So there's all these different strategies that we expect will evolve. And eventually, as more and more get acquired or merged, there's going to be less and less companies remaining. And so there's that kind of deflationary supply aspect with this game as well. But the difficulty gets, it gets more difficult over time. So we have this dynamic difficulty. So over time, it's going to be harder and harder to reduce the supply. So it kind of becomes a bit more stable over time, so you can comfortably like hold on to your company.
Huh, pretty interesting. So is there a winner?
There could be a winner. We more anticipated that. So again, this is like community driven. So you could join our Discord and like discuss like, hey, we should change this gameplay parameter to this, or we should do this. Or you can apply for grants and like, I want to create this game extension and you can do that and we'll pay for that. But we envisioned that maybe there'll be a top 500 and there'll be like a Fortune 500 out of them, like starting like 11,000 or so. So yeah, it deflates quite a lot. So you're a winner if you're in the remaining supply.
Huh. Pretty interesting. Okay. That's quite creative. And how does that tie into the platform?
Yeah, it was originally conceived as like a means of guerrilla marketing. So we wanted to bring a lot of the NFT crowd onto our platform, because our platform will eventually have heavy gamification aspects. So we think there's a lot of overlap there and we'd like them to get interested in preview. So on our actual platform, you will have your own user profile, so social profile with your own avatar. And as you do actions on our platform, you'll unlock achievements. You can also rank in leaderboards, you earn experience points, and then you unlock things for your avatar. And so there's that whole kind of gamified aspect to using our platform. And then you could even go to like other users' profile and you can kind of follow their trades, and there's a social trading kind of feature as well. So we're trying to make it a whole social experience and a gamified experience to really engage the type of user we're trying to target.
So what is the gamified experience, the leaderboard and the profile?
So the leaderboard, the avatars, and the achievements that you unlock for using our platform.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right. Well, how would you like the listeners to take action after hearing this conversation?
Good question. So we recommend that you join our Discord and follow us on Twitter. So on Twitter, we're prepio_io. And from there, you can find all the information about Prepio. And look forward to our game when that comes out. You can found your own company as well. And we look forward to seeing you there.
If you had a billboard in a highly trafficked area, maybe Times Square or somewhere else, somewhere in the middle of Korea, that's very highly trafficked, which I don't know much about Korea, but what would you put on that billboard?
We'd do something very cryptic. I've been researching ARGs, like alternate reality games, and they have all these like puzzles you have to solve before you find what it's eventually about. So maybe we'd do that. Like there's just some random like QR code or a bunch of like random characters, and you have to decode it into something and then follow a trail of puzzles until you eventually get to like Prepio and maybe earn some reward or something. So that's probably what I'd do.
I like it. A rabbit hole.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Xavier, thank you very much for taking the time today. I appreciate it. Best of luck on your project, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much. Talk soon.